Well, good evening, and I again greet you in Jesus' name this evening. It's good to be here again. Thank you for those devotional thoughts. It was very timely devotions. And what I mean by it being a very timely devotions is that it is for our time today. Because we live in a time where we can go to the throne of grace. We can come before the throne of grace. And we can obtain mercy. And we can find grace to help in time of need. But if you continue paging back in your Bibles to Revelation chapter 4, there we see the end of this throne of grace changes to a throne of judgment. And the throne of grace comes to, that dispensation comes to an end. And you start to see the judgments being poured out on mankind. And you start reading about the books that are being opened. And that's when you're going to really feel vulnerable, when there won't be anything hid. But that devotions was timely because today we do live in a time of grace, when we can boldly enter that throne through Jesus Christ. Well, this evening, for a lesson on creation, I would like to think about oceans. Oceans are very fascinating. This globe here has a lot of blue space on it. And that's because there's a lot of water on the earth. We live on the land, but we couldn't survive too well if it wouldn't be for all the water that's on the earth. About 71% of the earth's surface is water covered. And the ocean holds about 96.5% of all the earth's water. The oceans help to create the air that we breathe. We often think of trees and plants on the earth that produce the air called oxygen, but there's millions of tiny plants in the ocean that also produce this gas, this oxygen, for us to breathe. Oceans also help to keep our climate comfortable. It's cold and warm currents are traveling all around the globe, heating and cooling entire countries. And it's God's built-in heating and air conditioning to help keep the climate moderate. And it's just, it's a beautiful thing. Huge amounts of water on the surface of the oceans are constantly evaporating. And then they gather in clouds and they come over the earth and they fall as rain or snow or whatever form of precipitation. Oceans are very fascinating. Deep beneath the ocean's surface is an entire hidden world almost, a hidden universe that we can't see. We enjoy going to the ocean and all we see is the top. You see those waves rolling in but there's a whole universe almost underneath those waters. The terrain at the bottom of the ocean has its own plains, it has valleys, it has mountains, it has canyons. There are undersea mountain chains that will run for miles and miles. We live in central Pennsylvania, we live in the Appalachian Mountain Range, and you can follow that mountain range all the way down through the United States, and it's long, runs for miles. And there's mountain ranges just like that underneath the ocean that we cannot see. And there are trenches that are deep enough to swallow the earth's tallest peaks that would just fit right down inside the deepest trenches in the ocean. There are thousands of volcanoes under the surface of the water. And sometimes when these volcanoes get high enough, they start to push out the top and forms a new island out in the ocean somewhere. The water in the ocean depth is divided into three zones. Now, you school children aren't talking to me. I'll get you to talk yet till the end of the week. Does anyone know, and this is for adults, does anyone know what the three different zones are called under the ocean? Or do you know one? So the top layer is called the sunlight zone. And then beneath that is the twilight zone, and then the very bottom is called the midnight zone. I want to talk about them just a little bit. The sunlight zone is the layer of water from the surface down to a depth of 650 feet deep. And it's a level where the sun's rays can easily pass through the water and it brings light. There's some light there. And so this, of course, encourages the growth of plants, and which in turn attracts a lot of animal life, fish, in that first 650 feet. The sunlit zone is like a hunting ground, and the animals living here rely on speed and excellent vision for survival. As you look at the fish in the sunlit zone, the predators have bodies that are tapered like a torpedo so that they have lots of speed so they can catch their prey, and it lets them cut through the water very quickly. Prey, on the other hand, have many tricks for escaping the predator's sharp eyes and the speed. And there's one fascinating fish that is quite fascinating. It's called the flying fish, and I just printed a drawing of it here. And it's called the flying fish. It can, when it's being chased by a predator, it makes a dash to the surface of the water, and it leaps up out of the water, and it can spread its fins out like that, almost like a wing. And it can literally like fly through the air. And by lifting its long fins, and sometimes in the tail and the back, you'll flap that and hit it against the surface of the water if it needs to try to stay above the water longer. And in that way, as the fish that's trying to catch it is, he's going after it, and all of a sudden it just disappears, and he can resurface down in the water up to 600 feet away. It's pretty incredible. Now, it'd be a little unfortunate to be this fellow, because not only do you have fish under the water that want to catch you, but as soon as you try to escape the fish that are trying to eat you and you go flying up in the air, now there's the frigate bird, which is up there, and they know that these fish come out of the water, and so they'll just swoop down and grab them right out of the air as they're flying. So feel like you're kind of doomed, maybe. But it's an incredible way that God has created these fish to try to protect themselves. The sunlit zone is a place of many beautiful fish and plants. The coral reefs and the fish tend to be very colorful in that sunlit zone. The twilight zone, then, is the lair of the ocean from 650 feet down to 3,300 feet deep. And in that section, the sun's rays barely pierce through the darkness, and no plants can survive down there. And the creatures living here, often they'll just kind of float around, and they wait for scraps of waste matter or dead bodies of dead animals to sink down from above where they can just eat it. The twilight zone is home to thousands of species who have developed a unique way to cope with difficult conditions, and God has created them to live in that unique setting. One example of that is the deep sea anglerfish. And I know when I was little, I would think I saw monsters sometimes under my bed, but I know I never saw a monster. But this fellow here is not the prettiest of God's creation. It is quite an ugly fish, and I have no desire to catch one of these. I would be scared to get the hook out of his mouth for sure. But you see that little thing, this little rod sticking up? That little rod has a light on the top. It's a little night light. And it's like his little fishing rod. It's a fishing pole with a light on the end. And this pole has bioluminescent bacteria, which the fish uses to produce the light. And it blinks in the darkness of the water, so it's very dark down there, and that little light will blink. And that light attracts its prey. Other fish, small fish, they see that light, and they're attracted towards that light. And you notice how big his mouth is and how big his teeth are. And so those fish come, and he can just he says, are attracted to his light, and he just gobbles them right up. A fascinating way. Who would have thought to put a light on a fish and put it down where there is no light so it attracts? Amazing God that we serve. Then we have the midnight zone, which is the layer below 3,300 feet, and there is complete darkness, and the pressure is crushing. The cold is very intense down there, and the food is very scarce. And yet there are creatures that God created to be able to live in that environment as well. And I don't have any pictures of that, but of fish down there, but generally what they have seen is the fish that are down in that deepest part, their mouths are very gigantic, which increase their chances of gulping down any prey that happened to come their way, might be passing by. Creatures living in the deepest part are either blind or have no eyes at all, but rather they are sensitive to the tiniest vibrations, and they can sense movement through vibrations. And their bodies are often soft and jelly-like to help them withstand the pressure under there. So that's just fascinating. And then there's many underwater riches. The ocean is a hiding place for many of the world's treasures. That's deep under the ocean. It is said that if we could recover all the gold that was lost in the world's ocean, there would be enough to make a 5-pound gold bar for every person on Earth. Now, I don't know if that's true or how they know that, but there's other treasures like coral and pearls and seashells that have been collected. I think it was Monday evening I told you about the man that found the Titanic. His name is Robert Ballard. He's an American oceanographer and a marine geologist. I told you that, you know, there's his thoughts are that if we would invest as much into researching what's down in the ocean, it would be much more valuable than researching what's in space. But God created all these amazing things in the ocean. Why did God create these things? Why did he create all those fish down in the depths of the ocean, all those treasures that are down in there, and all those unique fish that man probably has not seen, all the fish that are down there? So why are they there? God commanded the sea to be formed, and he set the boundaries where it can or cannot go. And the Bible talks about the creatures of the sea, both large and small. And God created all these things. Why? To bring him glory. And when this ugly fish shines his light and catches fish, it's doing exactly what God created it to do. And it brings him glory. God knows it's down there. God knows those fish are down there surviving. And it brings him glory. It doesn't matter if we know it or not. It was created for his glory. The question is, are you and I bringing glory to God because of the way we were created? Well, I'd like to sing our theme song again. And if you want to follow along in your book, it's number 785 in the Zion's Praises. Our God, he is alive. And this evening, I would like to sing the first two verses. The first verse, there is beyond the azure blue. And the second verse starts out, there was a long, long time ago. Verse 1.
There is beyond the azure blue a God concealed from human sight. He tinted skies with heavenly hue and framed the world with his great might. There is a God.
This evening for a message, the title of the message is Self-Denial. I'd like to think about self-denial. Open your Bibles to Matthew chapter 16. Matthew chapter 16 and verse 24. Then said Jesus unto his disciples, If any man will come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. Self-denial is essential to follow Christ. He says here that if you're going to follow me, he does not say that some of you will have to deny yourself and take up your cross. It's not what he says. He doesn't say, I'm going to force you to deny yourself and take up your cross. But rather, he gives an invitation. And he says, if any man will follow me. The invitation is there for all of us to follow Jesus. But he says, if you're going to follow me, then here's what you have to do. You have to deny yourself, take up your cross to follow me. You see, we first of all have to deny self to take up our cross. The old self looks at the cross and looks at everything that goes with it, the shame, the pain, the discomfort, and the death. And our flesh looks at that cross and says, that's not what I want. There is not a one person here that looks at the cross and all that goes along with it and says, that's exactly what I want. That's what my flesh desires. That's what I wanted all my life. That is not natural to us. The old self wants and desires human approval. We want honor. We want comfort. And we want life itself. And we know that the cross is a symbol of death. And the flesh does not choose that. The flesh doesn't choose death. So what does it mean to deny self? What does self-denial mean? The Greek word is actually a very strong word, meaning to deny utterly, to disown or abstain. To refuse to associate with or be in companionship with, to separate. To separate from what? We're talking about refusing to associate, to separate from our carnal nature, our flesh. That's what we're talking about, self-denial. Where we are disconnecting ourselves from our flesh and we say, we don't want anything to do with that. Maybe a biblical example of this is, you know the story when Jesus was on trial. The soldiers came and they captured him and they took him. And I don't know exactly what it looked like, but I picture them sitting around the fire, and after all the disciples scattered, Peter was the bold one, and he kind of followed along, and he kind of pulled up to the fire a little bit. And it wasn't too long until the maid said, looked at Peter, she said, wait a minute, you're one of his disciples, aren't you? And what did Peter do? He denied Jesus. He said, no. I do not know this man. Wasn't long until the second person comes along and says, hey, you sound right like one of his disciples. You talk like Jesus' disciples. You're one of his disciples, aren't you? And he says, no, I don't know this man. And finally, the third time when someone says, you have got to be one of his disciples, the Bible says that he swore up and down and says, I don't know this man, I have nothing to do with this man. Now that was in a bad way. That was Peter denying Jesus, his Lord. But take that same principle. That is what how we should view our flesh, how we should view self. That is what denying looks like. And we should say, I don't want anything to do with the flesh and its desires and what it wants. I want to get rid of that, and I want to do what Jesus wants me to do. You see, self-denial is required for conversion. If we're going to come before Christ, then we have to deny self. We must all get to the point where we see in ourselves what is undesirable, what is inadequate, what is sinful, and what is selfish. And we must want rid of that. Deny that. We must get to the place where we want self rescued from self. And I was challenged as I was studying for this message. I wonder, do we fully understand what conversion is? Or are we teaching a false view and expectation of what it means to be born again? And I think it's something for us to think about, and probably us sitting here on the front row need to think about this and what we teach. You see, conversion is not simply waking up one day and realizing that you're standing in a line of people that are headed to hell. And you say, now wait a minute, I don't want to go to hell. And so I think I'm in the wrong line. So I'm going to step over here and I'm going to get in this line. And now I'm in the line, I'm a member of the church, and now I'm headed to heaven. That's not what conversion is all about. That is a part of it. It is a choice. That is a part of it. But that is not what true conversion is all about. Conversion is a choice of death to our flesh. It is saying no to the flesh. Jesus said, if you're going to come after me, then you have to deny yourself. Take up your cross and follow me. I wonder sometimes if we've been influenced too much by Protestant theology, and we teach the three steps to salvation, or you repeat this prayer, and now you're saved. Along with that, we are facing the challenges of living in a very affluent, peaceful time where modern society, for the most part, not only tolerates Christianity, but appreciates Christianity. And I'm afraid that when you combine those two, that we have created an environment of choosing Christianity while lying in a bed of ease, where we simply teach that we just need to get out of this line, and we come over to this line, and now we're okay. And you don't even have to deny yourself. We must get to the place where every part of our entire life is submitted to God, where we are submitted to His will, where we are submitted to His purpose, where we are submitted to His plan, where we are submitted to His people and to His church. And we are submitted to God. Some time ago at our church there at Tyrone, we were having a discussion on what are some of the biggest threats to the church today. And one of the things that we identified as one of the biggest threats to the church today is individualism. Would you agree that individualism is a big threat today? I believe it is. But the problem is, individualism and self-denial cannot coexist. You cannot have both in the same person. You cannot have individualism and self-denial. And so my question is, if individualism is a threat, have we created a world of Christian conversion that does not include self-denial? Does self-denial truly exist in Christian conversions in our churches today? A life of submission includes the things that we can control and the things that we cannot control. So I want to ask you something. What is your attitude towards the things that you cannot control? See, self-denial is not only actionable things, but it also must change our attitudes towards life. And I'm sure you have probably observed this, but there is a difference between a person with self-denial and the person who has not denied self in his attitude towards the things that he cannot change, especially when he faces things that go against his flesh, things that are not desirable. Maybe it's hardships. Maybe it's difficult times. And I know some of you have been through some very difficult times. But one thing I've observed is one that has not denied self, when they go through a hard time, for anybody, it's a hard time. We have to work through our emotions. We live in the flesh and we have to work through our emotions. I understand that. But the difference between someone that has not denied self is that that person will often become a very bitter and angry person because of the things that they cannot control. And the person that has denied self, while they have difficulties to work through and they work through their emotions, they can get to the place where they accept life and they know that God's in control because they're submitted to God's plan for them. A few months back, I sat with an Amish man. He was on the one committee with work, and he told us about the difficult times that they, the family, were going through, especially his daughter, his married daughter. His married daughter had a 3-year-old girl, and then they had triplets that were born. And because of complication, these triplets were all lost within the first few days, and all three of these little babies died. Within 3 months of losing the triplets, the little girl, the 3-year-old girl, had some heart problems and died because of the heart problems. All four of their children died within 3 months. Now, that's something difficult to go through. That's very difficult to go through, but I was blessed by his testimony, and I saw the difference between someone that was surrendered to God, that had denied self, versus what other people go through and what they have to deal with. But how have you demonstrated self-denial in things that you can control? Have you denied self when it comes to sin and the carnal nature? There are pleasures of sin that we should joyfully deny ourselves of, not grudgingly. Turn to Hebrews chapter 11. And what I want you to think about is, are you a Moses or are you an Achan? Hebrews chapter 11. In verse 23, speaking of Moses here, it says, "By faith Moses, when he was born, was hid 3 months of his parents, because they saw he was a proper child, and they were not afraid of the king's commandment. By faith Moses, when he was come to years, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season, esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures in Egypt. For he had respect unto the recompense of the reward. By faith he forsook Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king, for he endured as seeing him who is invisible." To me, this is an incredible story. Moses is a beautiful example for all of us. Moses could have stayed in Egypt. He could have stayed there if he wanted. When it came to things of this life, things of this world, he had a lot going for him. He was the son of Pharaoh's daughter, the most powerful man in the nation. And my guess is that he probably had everything that a man could ever want. He had power. He had honor. He probably had access to the highest level of education that he wanted. He probably could have had any woman that he wanted. He had access to everything. that his flesh would have desired. But it says he forsook all these things because he knew of something of greater importance. He forsook those pleasures for what? To become a shepherd out in the desert. We read about that the other evening. I want to ask you something. When you chose to follow Christ, did you understand that it was denying self of all the pleasures of sin around you? Did you understand that? That when you choose Christ, it's not just getting out of this line and getting in this line, but it means forsaking those things that are of the world, forsaking the pleasures of sin, and forsaking the glory and the pomp of the world, forsaking those things and following after Christ. Are you a Moses or are you an Achan? We're not going to turn to it, but in Joshua chapter 7, we know the story of Achan and how they were commanded before they went to battle that you are not allowed to take anything. But what did Achan do in that battle? He went into that tent and he saw what he wanted. He saw the money. He saw what it could do for him. And it says he took it. He coveted after it and he took it. He took of the accursed thing. And what was the result of it? He died. And his family died from that. Jesus said in Matthew 16:25 that if we save our life, we will lose it. If we go after what we want, if we try to preserve the flesh and preserve what the flesh wants, and we go after those things, Jesus said we're going to lose our life. We're going to lose our spiritual life. We're going to die spiritually. We can't be alive unto Jesus and try to stay after and cling on to those things. But if we lose our life, if we deny ourselves for his sake, that's where we find life. That's where we find true life. That's where we find true happiness. Have you denied self when it comes to sin and the carnal nature? What about when it comes to wealth and materialism? Now, that's a hard one. It's hard to deny self when we have wealth and materialism at our fingertips. We studied church history, and when you study church history, it is very telling, and I'm not a historian, but I've studied it enough to see a pattern that when the Anabaptist people, often when they faced wealth and affluence, they fell away. It's sad. And I don't think that we need to feel guilty with what God has given us. I don't think we should feel guilty about that. But we really need to sit up and pay attention. What are we doing with what God has given us? What are we doing with it? Have we truly died to self? And if we have truly died to self, then this wealth should not take us away from God. But how often have you indulged in something just because you can, and while you're doing it, you know it's not good for you? Have you ever done that? I would say we all have done it. When it comes to food, if nothing else, we have done it. We will eat things that we know are not good for us, but we do it anyway. But what about our spiritual life? What about our wealth? My wife and I were just talking about it recently, how it's so important, the environment that our children grow up in. Because we might be able to think through things, and maybe in our minds we think we can figure it all out. But our children grow up in this environment and it becomes normal to them. And we need to think about that. What environment are we bringing our children up in when it comes to wealth and materialism? When we don't deny self, we make ourselves prisoners of our own choice. And you maybe probably have heard of the story, the prisoner of his appetite. Thomas Costain's history, The Three Edwards, described the life of Reynold III, a 14th century duke in what is now Belgium. Grossly overweight, Reynold was commonly called by his Latin nickname, Crossus, which means fat. After a violent quarrel, Reynold's younger brother, Edward, led a successful revolt against him. Edward captured Reynold, but did not kill him. Instead, he built a room around Reynold in the castle and promised him he could regain his title and his property as soon as he was able to leave the room. This would not have been difficult for most people, since the room had several windows and a door of near normal size, and none of them were locked or barred. The problem was Reynolds' size. To regain his freedom, he needed to lose weight. But Edward knew his older brother, and each day he sent a variety of delicious foods. And instead of dieting his way out of prison, Reynold grew fatter. And when Duke Edward was accused of cruelty, he had a ready answer. My brother is not a prisoner. He may leave when he so wills. Reynold stayed in that room for 10 years and wasn't released until after Edward died in battle. But by then his health was so ruined, he died within a year, a prisoner of his own appetite. And that's sort of a gruesome story. But there's a lesson for us. Am I a prisoner of my own appetite? Do you practice self-denial in our wealth, in what we do? Or are we a prisoner of our own appetite? I want to read something that comes from, and I want to be very clear here before I read this. What I'm going to read comes from a secular expert. It's a worldly expert on self-esteem, who is writing from a worldly-minded perspective on the dangers of self-denial. Okay, so you get this. All evening so far, I've been telling you that we need to deny self. That's what Jesus teaches. But this is a secular man teaching the opposite, saying it's actually a danger to deny self. Okay, but listen to what he says. There is nothing innately good about keeping yourself in poverty, holy or otherwise. You aren't a better person for doing without things you truly enjoy, like a fine home, beautiful furnishings, comfortable clothes, and excellent health. There's no evil in those things, and you desire to have all those that you desire, as long as that desire springs from a healthy, well-balanced self-esteem. Now, does that sound any different to us today? Doesn't that sound like us? That's exactly what we do, don't we? We do what's comfortable. We do what we want to do, don't we? And maybe it comes from a well-balanced self-esteem. Something for us to think about. Self-denial is not grudgingly letting go of sinful things we love and reluctantly doing righteous things that we hate. Let me say that again. Self-denial is not grudgingly letting go of sinful things we love and reluctantly doing righteous things that we hate. Turn to Matthew chapter 13. Matthew chapter 13. I'd like to start reading. I just want to read a few verses here, 44 through 46. Jesus is speaking and he says, again, the kingdom of heaven is like unto treasures hid in a field, the which when a man hath found, he hideth, and for joy thereof goeth and selleth all that he hath and buyeth that field. Again, the kingdom of heaven is like unto a merchant man seeking goodly pearls, who, when he had found one pearl of great price, went and sold all that he had and bought it. Too often, we view self-denial as a sinful creature letting go of the wicked things he loves and embracing the righteous things that he hates in order to save his soul. That's too often how we view self-denial. You see, too often we picture a line between Christianity and worldliness. And we think that for some reason that we think that when we get to the age of accountability and we we decide we're going to get out of this line, and we're going to come over to this line because we want to be in the right line. Okay, so now we're members of the church, and we're in the right line. We're headed to heaven. But oh, we grudgingly are letting go of things of the world. The things that we love are out there. And somehow we view this, that we view the, that there's a line between the world and Christianity. And maybe this is the line right here, and we try to get as close to the line as we can and still be on the right side of the line, because when we die, we want to go to heaven. We want to make sure we're in the right line. And so we stay on this side of the line. And maybe sometimes when the preachers aren't looking, we'll even step across the line a little bit. As long as the preachers don't say anything, it's okay, right? Isn't that how we look at it sometimes? That is not what self-denial is. Self-denial is saying no to the things of the world. And we turn and we look at Christ and we turn our backs to the world and we look at Jesus and we follow Him instead of trying to get as close to the world. We're trying to get away from the world. That's what self-denial is. That is what Christianity is. That's what it means to follow Christ. And that's what it means when Jesus says, if you're going to follow me, you're going to have to deny yourself. Deny the flesh. Say no to all the joys of Egypt. And turn to me and follow me. Take up your cross and follow me. That's what self-denial is. That's what we're talking about tonight. Roughly a year ago, my wife and I were in Bangladesh, which is one of the reasons I wasn't here. James had asked me to come, I think it was 2 years ago. Have revivals here, but we couldn't come because we were, well, it's kind of a long story, but anyway, we were in Bangladesh last year visiting the churches over there, and I was touched. As we gathered together, we had some conferences with all the little churches. They came together and we had some teaching, and I sat in the back there. And all the natives, church leaders, they were together. And they don't have, over in Bangladesh, it's not a singing culture. You don't hardly hear any music, good or bad. They just don't sing much over there. And so they're trying to teach that a little bit. But all the deacons and the ministers and the bishop, they were standing up there. They stood up there in a row. And up there was the one bishop that... He was fairly high up in the Muslim world, and he was converted to Christianity. And when he came to Christ, when he gave his heart to Christ, him and his wife, he was taken to jail for it. He just disappeared, and his wife didn't know what happened to him. She didn't know if he was dead or alive. And he spent several months in jail. And today yet, his own mom, several times, has hired hitmen to go and try to get rid of him, but they've been unsuccessful so far. Up there was another man, one of the deacons, that when him and his wife joined the church and gave their hearts to Christ, she gave up all her jewelry. She took all her jewelry off. And the neighboring ladies, they gave her such a hard time. They would just torment her and torment her and torment them. Every time she'd go out of the house, eventually they had to move out of that village and move to a different village. They know what it's like to deny self. And we stood there. I sat in the back, and those men, they stood up there at the beginning of that church service, and they sang a song. And they sang, I have decided to follow Jesus. No turning back, no turning back. If no one joins me, still I will follow. No turning back, no turning back. The cross before me, the world behind me, no turning back. I sat back there and I cried because I didn't know what it was like. I knew that I didn't understand self-denial like those men did. They understood it. They counted the cost to follow Jesus. They weren't looking for the line. They knew that there was no line. They knew that Christianity wasn't a line. It was a direction of travel. And they were headed toward the cross. The world was behind them. And the cross was before them. And they weren't going to turn around. It didn't matter if they would be put in prison or if they'd be killed. That is self-denial. Do you think these men here in Matthew chapter 13, this man that found the treasure in the field, he was out working in the field and he found that treasure that was worth way more than everything that he had. Do you think he reluctantly went back and said, well, I guess I'm going to have to get rid of this if I'm going to buy that treasure. If I'm going to buy that field, I really don't want to get rid of this. No, it was with joy that he sold all that he had because he knew that the treasure in the field was far greater than everything that he had. When self-denial is reluctant, have we truly experienced the power of regeneration? Flip back to Matthew chapter 25. Well, for sake of time, I'm not going to read all of these verses. But in Matthew 25, we have this example here where the Son of Man, in verse 31, he comes in his glory with his holy angels, and he's judging, and he's dividing the sheep from the goats. In verse verse 34, then shall the king say unto them on his right hand, come, ye blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you and from the foundation of the world. For I was hungered, and ye gave me meat. I was thirsty, and ye gave me drink. I was a stranger, and ye took me in. Naked, and ye clothed me. I was sick, and ye visited me. I was in prison, and ye came unto me. Then shall the righteous answer him, saying, Lord, when saw we thee and hungered and fed thee, or thirsty and gave thee drink? When saw thee we a stranger and took thee in, or naked and clothed thee? Or when saw we thee sick or in prison and came unto thee? And the king shall answer and say unto them, verily I say unto you, inasmuch as ye have done it unto the least of these my brethren, ye have done it unto me. And he goes on and he tells the ones on the other side, he says, you didn't do these things. And I get a picture here. In my mind, it is a sacrifice. It takes self-denial. And it's a trial to feed the hungry, and to clothe the naked, and to give those that are thirsty water. That is a big sacrifice, right? Do you think those people felt that way? Do you think they felt it was a big sacrifice? It seems like they didn't think it was that big of a sacrifice. It seemed like it was a way of life for them. Otherwise, how could have they had the response that they did and say, well, when did we do these things? It was just our way of life. We were just doing it. If self-denial is doing things grudgingly, then how could they have this testimony? Paul Washer says this about self-denial that I liked. He says, the reality of a new creature simply living out what he has become through the regenerating work of the Holy Spirit, living according to his new nature, doing the righteous deeds that he now loves, and putting off the sinful deeds of the fallen, unregenerate flesh, which he now hates. The willful and joyful response of the regenerate man, whose mind has grasped something of God's glory, something of the worth of Christ's sacrifice, and something of the greatness of the salvation that has been so freely given to him. Do you recognize the treasure in the field? Do you recognize the treasure in the sacrifice that Christ has for you and me? Self-denial is not a selfish, grudging type of thing, but a new creature who loves and desires righteousness. Do you love God or do you love the things of the world? Where is your heart tonight? What do you love? When we see the value of the hidden treasure or the goodly pearl, the regenerate person will willingly, not grudgingly, give up the things of this world. He'll willingly give up those things because the treasure is far greater. And so we need to think about that and check our own hearts. Denying self, taking up the cross, and following Jesus takes on many different manifestations. And it might look different to different people. For some, you study history, there are some that died at the stake. And they knew that if they chose to follow Christ, if they took up the cross and followed Jesus, more than likely, they're going to get tied to that stake and be burnt. Some went on mission fields and maybe never came back. They gave their life to the mission field. Some literally gave up home and land or family for the gospel. For some, it's a rejection of their own parents, their family, or friends. And I don't know what it should look like in your life today. But the question I want to leave with you is, how does self-denial manifest itself for Christians in America today? How should it manifest itself? Self-denial results in the changing power of the gospel manifested in our everyday life. It needs to be an everyday part of our life. And it needs to be a wholehearted following the word of God, whatever the cost. It doesn't matter what the cost. You see, the words in this book are not just some little encouraging words that you read before you go off to work in the morning or before you lay your head on the pillow at night. Oh yeah, it is that. It should give us courage. But these are words that are to be lived out in our daily lives. Not just something to make us feel good. But it is something that we must devote ourselves to and to follow it regardless of what the cost is. And so what does self-denial look like in your life today? What does it look like in my life? In closing, I want to look at two passages yet. Turn to Luke chapter 21. Verse 34, and take heed to yourselves, lest at any time your hearts be overcharged with surfeiting and drunkenness and cares of this life, and so that day come upon you unawares. For as a snare shall it come on all them that dwell on the face of the whole earth. Watch ye therefore and pray always that ye may be accounted worthy to escape all these things that shall come to pass and to stand before the Son of Man. The question that we need to answer tonight is, are my unrestrained appetites blinding me of the possibility of the coming of Christ? Did you know that Christ could come right now? That he could come today? Did you think about that, or did my unrestrained appetites keep me from even thinking about that today? And that day is going to come unawares. Am I missing the signs of the fig tree that he talks about earlier in this chapter because of my appetites? Turn now to 1 Corinthians chapter 9. Verse 24. Know ye not that they which run a race run all, but one receiveth the prize? So run that ye may obtain. And every man that striveth for the mastery is temperate in all things. Now they do it to obtain a corruptible crown, but we an incorruptible. I therefore so run, not as uncertainly, so fight I, not as one that beateth the air, but I keep under my body and bring it into subjection, lest that by any means, when I have preached to others, I myself should be a castaway. One of the ways that self-denial will manifest itself is in temperance in life. And that's not just talking about food. We often talk about temperance in food, and that's all part of it. But do I have temperance in my eating habits, in my technology use, in my work, in my... You put whatever you want in there. Is temperance evident in your life today? Can people see evidence of it in my life that I have denied self? Well, tonight, have you denied self to follow Jesus? Are you ready to deny self, to take up your cross and follow Jesus? Perhaps you have never given your heart to Jesus. Maybe you never made that choice, and tonight you have an opportunity. The invitation is there. We read those verses in Matthew, that verse in Matthew, where Jesus said, if any man, he's not forcing you. Jesus is not going to force you to follow him. You have to choose it. But if you want to choose it, what you have to do is deny yourself, take up your cross, and follow Jesus. Tonight, maybe you're a member of the church. Maybe you made that choice, but you realize that instead of turning your back on the world and following after Jesus, you're the one that is trying to stick your foot across the line and get as close to the world as you can. And you realize that you have not denied self. You simply chose to get out of line and you make everything look good. And you're a member of the church. But inside, you're trying to keep your feet out in the world. And you have never forsaken Egypt like you know you should. And you're trying to have one foot in both kingdoms. You're trying to reap the benefits of both worlds. And you want to go to heaven, but you still want to get as close to the world as you can and do everything that you can as long as the preachers don't come talk to me. Is it evident to those around you, to your friends, your parents, your ministry, your co-workers, your neighbors, all those around you, that you have denied self and you're on fire for God? Is that evident? Tonight is the night to answer the call to deny self, take up your cross, and follow Jesus. And I would like to sing an invitation again. It's number 629 in the hymns of the church, Just As I Am. And if you're ready to count the cost, and you say, yes, this is what I want. I want to deny myself. I'm ready to deny myself, to take up my cross, and I want to follow Jesus regardless of whatever the cost is. And tonight, while we sing, just stand to your feet till I recognize you, and then you can be seated, and we'll meet with you. Someone will meet with you afterwards. Tonight, we're going to sing two verses. We're going to sing verse 3. And verse 6. Verse 3.
Just as I am, though tossed about with many a conflict, many a doubt, fightings and fears
that you are all on fire for the Lord and you've counted the cost. God bless you. Continue to pray. Let's stand for closing benediction.